Case number 245431, Joseph Ebu v. U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services et al. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Goldman, you may proceed for the appellant.
Thank you. And may it please the court, Brian Goldman for appellant Joseph Ebu. And I believe, Judge Clay, I've reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you. Joseph Ebu is a lawful permanent resident of the United States and has applied for naturalization. The government failed to make a determination on that application, and so under 8 U.S.C. 1447b, the district court, quote, has jurisdiction, end quote, to determine that application. And because 1447b indisputably vests the district court with jurisdiction, it also had authority under the Declaratory Judgment Act to issue a declaration declaring Ebu prima facie eligible for relief. No statute anywhere divests federal courts of jurisdiction or authority to make a determination under 1447b or to issue such a declaration. The district court held to the contrary only by committing the cardinal sin of statutory interpretation, importing words into a separate provision that the briefs have dubbed the priority provision, 8 U.S.C. 1429, based on views about legislative purpose and good policy, and the government repeats those arguments. That was improper.
Well, the district court followed our unpublished opinion, and they followed the opinions from the Second and Fifth Circuit on the issue. Did it not?
That's correct, Judge Griffin.
Okay, so I mean, you're arguing that that precedent is wrong, and I know you rely on the Ninth Circuit case. The argument is the Immigration Act of 1990. Gave the district courts more power over naturalization proceedings than they had before, because before 1990, it was very clear, was it not, that a naturalization court could not consider a naturalization petition if there was a removal proceeding pending? And you argue that Congress in 1990 afforded more?
Well,
more power to the district court to adjudicate this?
I quibble a little bit with that, Judge Griffin.
Well,
Congress limited the district court's power in the sense that it vested authority to naturalize solely with DHS, but
with two exceptions.
Correct, and that's where I was going to go next. So Congress did expand the district court's power.
No, they transferred it. My understanding is that before that, both district court and the agency, they both had the power to do it, and Congress transferred most of the power to the agency with a couple of exceptions to the district court, and they also provided that the sole power of the attorney general over naturalization proceedings, that the naturalization proceedings could not go forward if there is a removal proceeding pending, which was also the law before. But your argument is because they used the word U.S. attorney, or attorney general, rather than naturalization court, that they meant to change the whole scheme.
Well,
Is that right?
I disagree that we think they changed the entire scheme, but Judge Griffin, words do matter.
They changed the priority, I guess. The priority was before that removal proceedings had to go first, and then naturalization proceedings could go. And you're arguing in 1990 that they said, at least in the district court, no, you can have simultaneous proceedings at the same time. Well, I don't think so.
Only in what I think are extremely narrow circumstances that this case raises, but are otherwise pretty rare. So the government there has to be an application. This is where the district court could act. Only in these circumstances where there's an application, there's an examination that I'm not aware of any authority requiring the government to do an examination. And in fact, the Fifth Circuit in Saba Bakare lamented the government's conducting of examinations while removal proceedings are pending. So the government has to conduct an examination, which it doesn't have to do, and then 120 days have to pass. And because of that delay, then the district court is vested with jurisdiction under 1447B. I'd also
I recognize they have jurisdiction. It's just their power to act once they've got the jurisdiction. I think that's the distinction they make.
One other thing to point out that happened in 1990, and again, because the words matter, the words of the text matter, Congress amended the relevant provision here from no naturalization application shall be considered by a naturalization court. It struck that language and inserted by the Attorney General, which now is
transported to the Attorney General, taking away the district court's authority, I guess, to do this, except for the two circumstances. And your argument is, well, they also meant to change the priority, I guess, that removal proceedings have to occur first before the naturalization proceedings. And it's hard for me to say that's the intent of Congress. I know you're saying, well, we apply the plain language, and the language just refers to the Attorney General, but just to think that that's the intent of Congress is kind of hard to see.
I was struck, Judge Griffin, in the EPA Clean Water Rule case from 2016, I think it was your separate opinion, but it speaks to a general principle. It's at 817 F3D 261. And you wrote, recognizing the consequences of unbridled judicial forays into the legislative sphere, the Supreme Court has admonished time and again that courts must presume that a legislature says in a statute what it means and means in a statute what it says there.
You also read it in context.
Sure.
And you read the statutory provisions in harmony if you can, and you don't read them in isolation. And I do understand your argument. I know you agree with the Ninth Circuit case.
That's correct. If I may, Judge Griffin, I do want to point out the government's interpretation, the district court's interpretation of 1429 below, it violates at least three fundamental canons of statutory construction. The term by the AG, the term that we've discussed, it's in 1429. One, it renders it a nullity because effectively the district court and the government effectively cross out by the AG. And as Justice Scalia wrote in his separate opinion in King v. Burwell, the rule against treating a term as a nullity is as close to absolute as interpretive principles get. Second, it violates the expresso unius canon because the specification by the AG, the inclusion of one suggests the exclusion of others. So by including by the AG, but not saying by the AG and a court, Congress presumably meant to exclude district courts from that prohibition. Three, the canon against surplusage. So in section 1429, this is the phrase before the semicolon, and the government, as the panel is aware, has a semicolon argument. The phrase before the semicolon reads, no person shall be naturalized against whom there is a final finding of deportability. No person shall be naturalized. That applies on its face to both to actions by DHS and to actions by a court. The government effectively wants to mesh no person shall be naturalized and no application shall be considered by the AG to mean effectively the same thing. That violates the rule against treating different phrases as not having separate office. Two, and this also goes to your questions, Judge Griffin, the legislative history here does support the point that Section 1447B was intended to provide meaningful judicial review in the cases of a delay where the government hadn't decided an application within the statutorily required 120 days. The Fourth Circuit recognized this in the ETAP case. Congress, this is a quote, Congress included 1447B to ensure that applicants had judicial recourse when the executive failed to act. And based on the statute, the government...
The executive is prohibited to act on the naturalization application when the removal proceeding is pending, right?
Well...
I'm
not sure. Based on what the government has written in its brief, I'm not sure that's correct, Judge Griffin. In footnote 6 of the opposition, the government wrote, and I'm quoting, USCIS's current policy instructs that when an applicant for naturalization is in removal proceedings, USCIS must deny the N-400, that's the application, under Section 1429 based solely on the pending removal proceedings. So the government admits that actually the government can take action. It can only deny, of course.
They actually did that here, right? eventually after it went to district court. What's the current status of the removal proceedings and the naturalization
application? So, yes, there was a final order of removal. That was we represented Mr. Ibu in appeal before the Seventh Circuit. That was vacated, effectively remanded back to the agency. There's no current final order of removal. My understanding is that he is proceeding before the immigration judge, and my further understanding is that the agency is waiting to see effectively how these proceedings play out.
Well, the core, I mean, all this sounds rather complicated and talks about a lot of different things, but the core of your argument is if you read 8 U.S.C. section 1447B, it's clear that the district court has authority to act here. Is that the sum of it?
That's exactly right, Judge Gibbons, with the additional point that the district court clearly erred in holding that 1429 prohibits any relief being granted by a district court because it effectively added words into 1429 that aren't there.
And 1429 clearly speaks to the attorney general, but not to a district court.
Correct. That's exactly right, Judge Gibbons. And I'd add the Yif case out of the Ninth Circuit, Judge Ikuda wrote for the panel there, and they recognize this point precisely. I reviewed that decision several times. I think it's exceedingly well-reasoned, and I know the panel's familiar with it. I do want to touch briefly, as I see my affirmative time is running low, on the declaratory judgment claim. I think it's plain that the district court had authority to issue a declaratory judgment here. It was pled in an appropriate pleading, the complaint. This court has jurisdiction under 1447B. That determination is controlled by the Zayed case of this court. And there is a live case or controversy. The parties are, as Judge Easterbrook put it for the Seventh Circuit and Clean, the parties here are locked in a controversy over whether Mr. Ibu can be removed, or on the flip side of the same coin, whether he can be naturalized. And a prima facie declaration of eligibility for naturalization would affect the record for removal. That's what the Third Circuit said was enough in the Gonzalez case, because it might help bring the removal proceedings to a prompt close. And that's what Judge Easterbrook wrote for the Seventh Circuit in Clean. I see my time is up.
All right.
Thank you.
We're from the government. Morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Carolyn Dillard on behalf of the government. This Court has already recognized in Zayed that Congress clearly intended for removal proceedings to be completed before an application for naturalization can even be considered, and that's pursuant to Section 1429. The reason for this is to avoid naturalizing someone who would have otherwise been ordered removed and thus become ineligible for citizenship. In this case, the plaintiff was placed in removal proceedings following guilty pleas to crimes relating to fraud. He then filed an application for naturalization with USCIS. After 120 days passed without USCIS issuing a decision, he then filed an action under Section 1447B asking for the district court to consider his application for naturalization in an effort to get his removal proceedings terminated. The issue here is whether or not the district court may consider the plaintiff's naturalization application under Section 1447B while the immigration court is currently in the process of considering whether or not his criminal convictions render him removable. And the answer to that question is no, because it would clearly contravene Section 1429.
Why should 1429, which refers to the Attorney General only, limit in any way the statutorily given power of the district court in another provision? I mean, we have to assume Congress knew what it was doing, and it was very explicit in its language. It might, as a policy matter, be good for the interpretation you argue to be the correct policy interpretation, but that's not, I don't see how you can transform the chosen desire of the executive agency's policy into a limitation on the statutory language, the plain statutory language of 8 U.S.C. Section 1447B.
Well, with respect to Section 1429, The context of the statute matters, as well as the context of the statute matters.
Can the context of a statute limit the specific language of another statute?
Well, the clear congressional intent of the statute is to prioritize removal proceedings over naturalization proceedings. And we have to look to other related statutes, because when a district court can review an application for naturalization, it has to follow, and it's still bound by, all the requirements of all the naturalization statutes. So, for example, we can look at Section 1427. 1427E specifically addresses the determination of an application for naturalization, and it states, in determining whether the applicant has sustained the burden of establishing good moral character, the Attorney General shall not be limited to the applicant's conduct during the 5 years preceding the filing of the application. So just like Section 1429, Section 1427E does not have the words naturalization court or district court, but that does not mean that Section 1427E does not apply to the district court when a district court can review an application for naturalization. And we can also look to Section 1427B, which addresses periods where the applicant has been absent from the United States, and it reads, the applicant shall establish to the satisfaction of the Attorney General that he did not, in fact, abandon his residence in the United States. And again, we're noticing a pattern here within these naturalization statutes that they do not specifically mention a naturalization court or a district court, but that does not mean that Section 1427B does not apply to a district court when a district court can.
But that would go to what's proper for the district court to consider as a policy matter and as a matter of other statute. You've got to give, it seems to me, you have to give effect to all of applicable statutes, and you can't strip 1447 of its clear language just because there may be other statutory provisions that would counsel the district court taking those into account once it had the case. I mean, surely there's a way for all of this to be read in harmony that allows the considerations that you would like to have considered, as well as the explicit grant of jurisdiction to the district court.
Your Honor, the statute exactly must be read in harmony, and plaintiff's argument does not allow for Section 1447B and Section 1429 to be analyzed in harmony. And we have to also consider the context of Section 1429 with respect to when the amendment was conformed, because prior to 1990, it was the district courts that were considering applications for naturalization in the first instance. But that changed with the Immigration Act of 1990, where the Attorney General, now USCIS, became the primary adjudicators of naturalization, and the district court could only consider applications for naturalization under limited circumstances. So simply because Congress chose to amend Section 1429 in a way that conforms to the now current process of the way that naturalization applications are adjudicated does not mean that Section 1429 does not apply to the district court when removal proceedings are pending. And, Your Honor, we can also look to precedent where the majority of courts to have decided this issue have concluded the same. For instance, this court recognized in Rahman that Section 1429 limits the scope of the district court's review of the available remedies in an action brought under Section 1447B when removal proceedings are pending against the applicant. And this holding originates from this court's holding in Zayed, a 2004 published decision, where this court similarly held the scope of the district court's authority cannot be any greater than the authority of the executive to consider the petition in the first place. So adopting plaintiff's arguments would be inconsistent with the holding in Zayed, where it would give the district court greater authority than the executive has to consider the petition in the first place.
Well, sometimes district courts and other courts have more authority than the Attorney General does, particularly if given by statute. I mean, that's a policy argument from your perspective that the district court shouldn't have the authority, but it's in the statute.
Well, this court in Zayed interpreted Section 1429, and it held that the scope of the district court's authority cannot be any greater than the authority of the executive. And Zayed also spoke to those 1990 amendments, and it said, we are aware of no suggestion that Congress intended the priority of removal proceedings over naturalization proceedings to be altered by the 1990 amendments. So interpreting Section 1429 and Section 1447B would be inconsistent with the holdings reached in Zayed with respect to the prioritizing of removal proceedings over naturalization proceedings. Also, Your Honor, the Supreme Court addressed this very issue in Schomburg, and it described this issue as a race between a non-citizen to gain citizenship and the Attorney General to remove the non-citizen. And it explained that Section 1429 was to end that race, and it described Section 1429 as the priority provision because it indeed prioritizes removal proceedings over naturalization proceedings. And we can also look to precedent from other circuits. The Second Circuit has held that Section 1429 does not permit an alien to state a claim for relief under Section 1447B while removal proceedings are pending against him. And the Fifth Circuit recognized the district court's authority under Section 1447B to remand the matter or determine the matter, but it clarified that in either instance, the appropriate determination is controlled by Section 1429. And with respect to plaintiff's argument that USCIS could consider the naturalization application based on USCIS's policy to deny an application based on pending removal proceedings, the denial based simply on pending removal proceedings is not considering the application because it did not reach the merits, which is exactly what plaintiff is asking the district court to do, to determine his application for naturalization reaching the merits. The May 2024 decision simply denied the application based on pending removal proceedings, which is consistent with Section 1429. Additionally, Your Honors, we can look to the language of Section 1447B. Section 1447B was meant to provide review of a naturalization application where appropriate. It was not meant to influence or circumvent pending removal proceedings. Section 1447B has very clear discretionary language stating the district court may either determine the matter or remand the matter, very clearly giving the district court two options to either determine the matter or remand the matter. But plaintiff's argument, more or less, is seeking to force the district court's hand to determine the matter because plaintiff admits that remanding to USCIS would be futile because USCIS has no power under Section 1429 to determine the application. And so it's very doubtful that Congress would have written a statute, Section 1447B, where 50% of the relief that it contemplates would be practically unavailable, and it would nullify that discretionary language within the statute. The reality is that Congress intended for Section 1447B to provide relief when removal proceedings are not pending. And just as a matter of practicality, Your Honors, allowing a district court to determine a naturalization application during pending removal proceedings could lead to complete chaos, not only between the immigration court and the district court, but potentially between the immigration court, the district courts, and the circuit courts. For instance, plaintiff is currently in removal proceedings before an immigration court under the Seventh Circuit. Hypothetically speaking, the immigration court could be ordering a hypothetical non-citizen similar to the plaintiff removed around the same time the district court is considering an application for naturalization.
Sure. And Congress attempted to stop this race, right?
Exactly.
That was kind of the intent of the
yes.
1990 Act. And I guess the argument is, well, they didn't do it very artfully because they only referred to the U.S. Attorney, or the Attorney General, I mean, But, I mean, there's no doubt that this race that you're talking about was intended to be ended, right?
Correct, Your Honor. And even if the statute could have been written more clearly, the mere possibility of clearer phrasing cannot defeat the most natural reading of the statute.
The entire context and what does the statute do? I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that it is intended to stop this race, that you've got naturalization proceedings going on at the same time as removal proceedings, and they can't do that. And the Congress used the word attorney general, but at the same time, they transferred the sole power of naturalization to the attorney general with the two exceptions.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And also, I just want to make a few points about the plaintiff's request for a declaratory judgment. Section 1447B does not authorize the district court to issue a declaratory judgment but for pending removal proceedings. And doing so would be inconsistent with Section 1429, which prioritizes removal proceedings over naturalization proceedings. And also, the Declaratory Judgment Act does not create an independent cause of action that would authorize this type of relief. Further, 8 CFR 1003.18 instructs that it is the immigration court that would make a determination on the plaintiff's prima facie eligibility for naturalization. And the preamble to that rule recognizes that pursuant to Section 1429, removal proceedings are to take precedent over naturalization applications. Additionally, Your Honor, issuing a declaratory judgment on the plaintiff's prima facie eligibility but for pending removal proceedings would not be binding on the immigration court because the immigration court or USCIS and the immigration court would not be required to honor it. It's a declaration of eligibility. It's not a grant or denial of a naturalization application. Additionally, it would contravene various provisions of Section 1252 to preclude a district court review of removal proceedings and channel any issues related to removal through the petition for review process. I see my time is almost up, Your Honors. Unless the court has additional questions, I can close with a few remaining remarks.
I have none.
No.
If plaintiff prevails on his removal proceedings, he may ultimately be able to get the relief he seeks, which is review of his naturalization application. He simply has to wait for his removal proceedings to conclude and to determine whether or not he prevails on them. However, there's currently no relief the district court can grant to the plaintiff under Section 1447B in light of Section 1429, which precludes the consideration of his naturalization application while his removal proceedings are pending. Therefore, this court should affirm the district court's decision dismissing the plaintiff's complaint for failure to state a claim for relief which can be granted. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. A rebuttal.
Thank you. Just a few quick points. Towards the end of the government's presentation, it made a pine to good policy, but of course, courts do not make good policy. Those decisions are left for Congress. And Judge Griffin, I think it gets to the concerns that we've discussed a little bit. Congress can always amend the statute here. And if it was an artfully drafted, presumably even the Congress is currently situated could pick up their pens and make this small edit. But they didn't do that after Yith. And if they feel so compelled if they felt so compelled that Yith was wrongly decided, surely Congress could have and would have amended the statute.
Well, they might have thought that was just an outlier decision by the Ninth Circuit, that the majority view is in favor of the government, and the outlying decision, had you know minimal effect. I'm grappling. Is it just inartfully drafted, or is it the intent of Congress? And normally, you do look at the words of the statute and assume that is the intent of Congress. But I mean, my question is the overall scheme. This, if you apply the literal words here, it's contrary to the whole scheme of the statute, and that's It's a difficult issue.
I do want to make a pass at why I do think, Judge Griffin, honestly, this was the intent of Congress. This is a small slice of cases. There has to be a naturalization. 1447B was enacted as part of the 1990 amendments. They struck naturalization court, added by the Attorney General. And this situation only arises if there's an application and they conduct an examination and they don't issue the denial that the current regs say they have to issue. Only in those situations do you get...
In that situation, the priority provision, which is quite clear that removal proceedings must occur first, that's changed.
Well, I think based on the text that Congress enacted in this small slice of cases, that is what Congress intended. Okay. I do want to make a quick point on Ziad. The government talked about it quite a bit. Ziad fully supports our position here. I'm quoting from the case. This is at 368 F3D at 905. Quote, this is from Ziad. By its terms, the statute, 1429, limits the authority of the Attorney General, not the authority of the district courts, to act on applications for naturalization. That's from Ziad. And I'll close with a final point. If Congress had intended for this slice of cases, Judge Griffin, to be exempt effectively from the priority provision, that would be consistent with an unbroken executive practice dating back to the 70s of the IJs having discretion to terminate removal proceedings to let a naturalization application go forward. So it existed then. Congress legislated against that background presumption, and it's reflected in the current text of the statute. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And the case is submitted.